This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. A community partnership here in Chattanooga is renovating homes as a way to revitalize the Orchard Knob neighborhood. It is called the Orchard Knob Collaborative, and the partners include Habitat for Humanity, Park Ridge Health System, the Orchard Knob Neighborhood Watch Association, and the United Way. Park Ridge and its parent company donated $40,000 to start the project, focusing on 5 homes in the neighborhood with plans to expand. Joining us for a conversation are Tom Osborne, Park Ridge's president and CEO, David Butler, CEO and president of Habitat for Humanity, Marvin Knoll of the Orchard Knob Neighborhood Watch Association, and Dominique Brandt, vice president of community impact for United Way.
Tom, Marvin, Dominique, David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Good afternoon, Ray. We're so happy that you invited us to be part of this.
Tell folks who have heard about the Orchard Knob Collaborative more about its mission.
My name is Tom Osborne. I'm with Park Ridge Health System. And the Orchard Knob Collaborative is a partnership between public and private organizations that have come together to focus their efforts to take resources that were already being, to some extent, focused in the Orchard Knob Collaborative, but we wanted to bring them all together at one point. And if we could take those efforts and focus them, raise money, could we make a sizable difference in the Orchard Knob community from a standpoint of housing? As a healthcare provider, we see patients all the time in acute situations. And one of the most important things once we get them better is to discharge them to a safe and healthy home. And so the reason Park Ridge is getting behind this is that we wanted to, since we are actually located in the Orchard Knob community, we wanted to be an active participant to try to better the homes in that community.
Well, let's hear from some of the other stakeholders here.
Well, from a United Way perspective, we were very excited when Tom expressed this vision for really seeing this Orchard Knob community flourish. The work that United Way does is very data-driven, and we're very blessed to have on staff what we like to call the data guru for Hamilton County, Dr. Eileen Rayberg. And she and Ms. Noel work together to survey the community on the social determinants of health and establish some of the baseline issues that were causing problems that were causing the residents to end up right back in the ER and in the hospital. And this is really an incredible vision because we understand that the work is very large, so it cannot be done by one agency or one individual, but it's too important for us not to all do it together. So the vision of having neighborhood in at the ground floor of this, where the neighborhood's voice is really heard and is what is driving this, and then to have the private and the public partnership, that is really the transformative work.
And Marvin, tell me more about that neighborhood voice.
The neighborhood voice was, I met Mr. Tom Osborne, understood our plight. We sat and we talked, we had conversation, the concerns that we were having in the neighborhood. The people that live there have been there for 30 plus years, the majority of them. So we're grounded in the neighborhood. So everyone wants to have a good quality of life, a decent home, affordable utilities, good food, healthy, be a healthy place to live. We are a neighborhood. We come together, we potluck together, we look out for each other, that type of thing. So the issue is we're an aging neighborhood as well. But the thing of it was we had programs that was there out there for us, but the problem was the income guideline. The income guideline was a stumbling block for us. So when I sat down and talked to Ms. Osborne, he came to the table and he brought it and he removed that. And he has been on board ever since to help us do what need to be done. And we are in the process of doing 5 homes at a time. One has been completed. It's my understanding there's a couple more that's underway right at this point. But I will let Habitat David speak on that.
I'm Dave Butler from Habitat. As Tom mentioned, Habitat has worked in the Orchard Knob area previously. We have been doing repairs of houses for about 5 years. prior to this area, we worked in Bushtown and East Chattanooga. But one of the criteria that we had is that there's a strong homeowners association. And that gives us some credibility when we go into a new neighborhood. So that's one of the things that really piqued my interest about focusing on Orchard Knob. The other is that over 75% of the homes in Orchard Knob are older than built in 1980. With houses that old come challenges. That combined with what Marvin said about the average age of the population in Orchard Knob, people are on fixed incomes. There's just so much that they can spend on keeping up their house. So our goal with the collaborative is to keep people in homes and to do the most important work that needs to be done on their house. For instance, roofs, HVAC systems, etc.
And checking for those things that we know to look for in homes built before 1980, such as lead paint.
That's right. And we are certified to do lead remediation, but generally speaking, if that is a problem that we get confronted with, we work with the city of Chattanooga and refer people to the city.
Tell us what's next in this ongoing project. We talked about the five homes underway.
There's a process with this, and it starts with Marvin. And Marvin vets the people, and those people, the first five were five that Marvin chose. When they come to us, we do a basic application, and once they get approved, we go and do an assessment. Three people go to the home, and we take a myriad of pictures, because we want to have before and after pictures. And those assessments, we've done three full assessments now of the five that are part of this. Our first intention is do the repairs, because that's the most critical thing. But we've been building houses for over 30 years. So if there is land or if there's blighted property that really needs to be knocked down, then we're interested in building homes also.
And in the work that you're doing here for the Orchard Knob Collaborative, making those homes livable after you're done with that work. And that's where organizations such as United Way come in.
Yes, this is Dominique with United Way. One of the things that we are working to also engage these residents who are having their homes repaired, we have a Building Stable Lives coach in that community. And what this Stability Life coach basically does is work with the individual or the family on whatever areas, whether it's finances, mental health, whatever it is that is keeping them from moving up and making that progress towards financial and familial stability that we all really seek, to make sure that they are engaged and referred to the right resources and have access to those and can really make some progress. So that's been part of the vision, again, that Tom Osborne has brought to this. And I'm going to let him speak, because I know that the vision is even broader and some additional partners are coming on board and going to be part of this as well.
It's been exciting since we've started this journey, which literally started with Marvin and David from Habitat and United Way coming together and raising an initial sum of money to get started. But since the word has gotten out, we've had so many other agencies come forward. And so now we have the YMCA at the table. We have Green Spaces at the table. We've got Signal Centers at the table. We've got physician groups that have stepped forward with financial donations, University Surgical Associates. Galen just gave a $5,000 donation. Macaulay School called us and said, hey, look, this is our neighborhood too. How can we be involved? So now it's really about how do we take this to the next level. Our goal, literally, and you know, I said this, is to touch every single home. And then we take the Orchard Knob Historical District, which is a historic area, and we bring it back to the glory that it once was. And then we hope retailers come in and grocery stores and everything else.
And what should people expect to see as 2020 continues to unfold?
I think they'll see further construction. I think they'll see more stories, individual stories from some of the individuals that we touch. David has a great example that he was just sharing with me. One of our first builds or our first repairs, the homeowner, Miss Sandra, is now donating her time at Habitat. So she's paying it forward. You know, we came and we helped her out and we fixed her house. And Now she wants to give back and pay it forward. And I think that's what this is all about. So we want to see more people jump on board. We want to see more people get excited about this. If people want to give money, that'd be great too.
The circle comes around.
So back to me. The main thing I think we will see is these very fine, stately homes that needed some tender loving care that, like Mr. Osborne said, it will come full circle. We're going to expect to see some curb appeal and definitely some much needed, I guess you could say, relief from some of the homeowners that their home will be in a situation that is livable or better a living condition than what it has been, that's safer, that will keep, I guess, the risk fall factor very low, if not at all. So it's going to be a wonderful thing. It has been absolutely wonderful. Everyone is just very, very happy and so thankful and appreciative as to what has come.
And where can people go online for more information?
So you can go directly to Habitat and you can look at their website and see what we're doing. United Way has also placed some information about this, and then we are in the process of developing more material that can be found online to help people. We do want to try to streamline the application process, make it easier. The people that want to reach out, we want to make that easier, and so I think more to come on that.
We also had quite a bit of media a couple weeks ago, a lot of interest, people walking into Habitat, calling, etc. So we've streamlined it a little bit. People will still come to Habitat, but what we're going to do is direct them to Maureen and the Homeowners Association. And she has monthly meetings, and we will attend her meetings so that everybody hears the same thing the same way. What we do in a house, what we don't do in a house, how the process works, how we do assessments, etc. I think we've got that down pretty well.
And we should also talk about something else that Habitat is doing.
Every year, we have a women build. Women work on a house. Women fund the house. Their houses stand a lot stronger than a lot of the men houses out there. But on March 7th, from 9 o'clock to 10:30 at the Chattanooga Hotel, we have our annual women build breakfast. It's going to be a jazz breakfast this year. And we expect to have somewhere around 250 to 300 people at the breakfast. Men are allowed to be there, but this is a women's get-together. And we have a celebrity guest who's going to be at the breakfast and at the build, and that happens to be Tom's wife. So this is a small town, as evidenced once again.
Well, like I said, the circle comes around. All right. David, Marvin, Tom, and Dominique, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Logan Taylor and Dante Hampton are the creators of Why Be Normal, an organization that provides support for troubled and underprivileged youth. The Chattanooga natives formed Why Be Normal, that's with a letter Y, a letter B, and a question mark after the word normal, after back-to-back shootings 5 years ago. Logan and Dante have brought Why Be Normal to schools here in Hamilton County and across the country, hosting motivational events and sharing curriculum. They stop by Scenic Roots.
Logan, Dante, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Tell me more about Why Be Normal.
Why Be Normal, we actually started in 2015. We became legal in January of 2016. But Why Be Normal, who we are, what we do, we help economically disadvantaged at-risk youth. We help them overcome obstacles through empowerment speaking, curriculum development, mentoring and coaching, and community outreach once a month.
And this is right here in Chattanooga.
Absolutely. We are based out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, me and my partner, Dante Hampton.
How did you come up with the idea for this?
How everything transpired and how I came up with this name was that I was on family vacation in Florida. At the time was my girlfriend, now my wife. We were on family vacation, and I remember somewhere between like June and July in a week, we had somewhere between like 15 to 20, no more than 25 shootings. And that's massive compared to bigger cities like New York, Chicago, Florida, Texas, California, things like that. Like, that's massive considering that we're a mid-major city. And so for me, within, I want to say, an hour, no more than 2 hours, I got over 40 phone calls about people passing away somebody being shot or something happening here in the city. So for me, I felt like that was a cry out for help. And I told my wife, I want to do something. I want to give back. I want to empower the next generation. I want to empower this city. And so she asked me the what, the when, the how, the why, you know, all of those questions that a person would ask you to see if you're serious or not. And so when she asked me those questions, I was just spitting them off like quick fire, boom, 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 boom. She asked me right before we got to our hotel, we were at a stoplight, and she said, Logan, what do you want to name it? And I sat right there because we were at a stoplight, and I was just in my thinking of names and things of that nature. And she said, what do you want to name it? And I sat right there, and the light turned green. Well, you know, when you're at a stoplight, if you don't go fast enough, if there's somebody behind you, they're going to blow the horn. And so what happened was that there was a person that was behind us, and they blew the horn, and it broke my train of thought. And I told her, I looked at her, and I said, why be normal? And then we pulled off into the hotel. That's how I came up with the name.
And that's the letter Y, the letter B, normal.
Absolutely. So I didn't want to spell it W-H-Y-B-E. When I had it placed on a shirt, it didn't look right. And then I also thought of, from a standpoint of, how can I make this a conversation piece? Because if you see somebody with a YB Normal shirt, of course, you may crack a joke and say, hey, you know, YB Normal, I don't believe in being normal, you know, things of that nature. Or somebody say, well, what is YB Normal? Well, it's funny that you asked. I'm glad that you asked what that is. Here's a local organization here in the city. This is some of the things that we do. These are some of the things that we have going on. And this is our strategic plan and what we want to do for the future and for this city.
And Dante, tell us more about how you got involved in all this.
So I got involved. I had just finished up playing at UTC. I had graduated in 2013, and I was coming off a knee surgery. And so around that time, I was trying to decide if I was going to go play pro overseas or anything like that. And I got a call to go play overseas, but I wasn't ready. My body wasn't ready. So around that time, I was in the community. I was training. I was coaching. I was literally shuttling kids back and forth to rec centers every Saturday. Just trying to help my younger brother, his friends, and various kids in the community as far as getting around town. He posted something about YB Normal, and we sat down. And I literally had probably about 4 months ago, I had just spoke at a conference at UTK for Brenda Lawson, and they was talking about how they donated money to the practice facility that UTC has right now. And they did a big story on it. I was featured in the story, and I had to speak in front of 20,000 people. And so that really ignited me to want to be more impactful. And I seen what he was doing, and we linked up. And I started out as an empowerment speaker, going around telling my story. And as things happened, I just continued to go up the ladder. People felt they didn't want to be a part anymore. We had just a few conversations, and eventually I became CEO.
And describe a bit more what you all do in the community.
I mean, you see it.
You can see it anywhere.
You can see it anywhere. You can see it on social media. You can walk the neighborhoods and see kids wearing T-shirts. You can go into a school and see what we're doing. You can ask, you know, some of the political people here in the community, you know, hey, what is this and what's going on? And, you know, they'll tell you who we are and what's going on. And we do a lot inside of the schools with our curriculum development program, as well as we do the speaking part. So we do assemblies at different schools, not just here locally, but nationally. And so doing that here locally, like you were asking, you know, where can people see it at? It's all over in the community. It isn't just a specific community that we're channeling. It's the complete city of Chattanooga. We have kids at Ottawa that have, you know, YB Normal shirts, but we also got kids at Howard out in the Alton Park community that have shirts. You know, we got kids out in East Ridge that have shirts. We got kids out in Red Bank that have shirts. And so for us, it's just simply just doing the work, laying the foundation down, and helping people, especially this next generation, helping them be able to change the lineage for them and then the people behind them.
You mentioned curriculum development. Talk to me more about that.
So our curriculum development, we created three curriculums. Me and Dante came up with them. They're wrapped around social and emotional learning. We teach soft skills, life skills, effective communication, verbal and nonverbal, self-esteem, entrepreneurship. There's a plethora of things that we touch on. And, you know, we have the data proven that, hey, look, YB Normal curriculum development program, it works. This is how it works. This is what we do. Here's where we've made the changes. And this is where people that have came through our curriculum, hey, here's the data and here's what we've done and here's what has transpired and things of that nature. And of course, you know, Dante can go into more detail about it.
So specifically, one is called 2190, and that's more so geared to middle school and high school. And that's basically take 21 days to create a lifestyle. And I'll say, or just say 21 days to build a habit, 90 days to change your lifestyle. And that's pretty much where you're focusing on your talents and you're focusing on characteristics that you have about yourself and you exemplifying those. If I'm good with my hands, what does that look like as a middle schooler? If I'm good with my hands as a high schooler, what does that look like? How can I get a side job? Maybe I'm changing oil. You know, maybe I'm washing cars. What does that look like? If I'm an artist, what can I do to generate revenue for my family? How does that make me feel? Does that boost my self-esteem? So that's what you're dealing with the 2190. Then we have I See You, which is more so for elementary, but it can be with middle school. And that deals with more so self-esteem, public speaking, emotional and social learning. But it's also more so as a 5-year-old, as an 8-year-old, what does that look like for me? How do I feel learning to effectively communicate to an adult by being respectful? Or if I'm having a bad day, how can I explain that as a 6-year-old?
What's something that you've learned over the past few years in doing this?
I've learned a lot because we literally started this from ground zero. And so what I've learned is, you know, being consistent, not making it about yourself, and then also making sure that you are who you say you are. Because people, especially kids, like, kids, they won't lie. And so if they not feeling you or if they don't like it, like, they will tell you, hey, I'm not feeling this, I'm not liking this. And they won't say it like that, but they'll tell you, like, I don't like this. We haven't ran into that hiccup yet. Thank the man above that we haven't. However, I just believe that if we want to see change, then we got to be the change. And so, you know, for us, it's like, it's so many lessons that we've learned, like people quitting on us, people flaking on us and giving us the cold shoulder because we could have gave up then when people were saying, no, we knocking on the door and you not answering or you not giving us an opportunity. But you say you want people out here that are doing things in the community or doing things in the schools and things of that nature, but you don't want to give people opportunities. And so for us, it was like, okay, well, you're not going to give me an opportunity. Then you know what? I'm going to build my own foundation and I'm going to build my own house. And this is what it's going to look like. And eventually, you're going to give me an opportunity because you're not going to have any choice because there's nobody doing what we're doing.
I think for me, what I've learned is take what's given and just roll with it. A lot of times when you get in this field, people try and have a perception for you or they try and put you in a box. And for us, it's literally just been about whatever we want to do, we're going to do it and you're not going to stop it. And however you throw it at us, whatever roadblock you put up, and we're okay with that. Now, how we get around that roadblock, we'll get around it, but it's not about that. And I think that's what makes it more unique, and I think that's what makes YB Normal special is we not had roadblocks the whole time, and we literally figured it out from the very beginning, from all the way down to literally getting a 501c3.
How do you keep everything in balance while you're figuring things out for YB Normal and doing what you do? You have lives, you have families, you have your passion, you have your mission, but you have to keep all that in balance. That's got to be tough.
It's funny you say that because we literally are releasing a book here soon called 100 Ways of Why Be Normal. And it will literally basically break down how Why Be Normal is and what it looks like. What does it look like on a day-to-day basis? What does it look like on a global scale? And it talks about the struggles of how we came about. And that's what makes it unique is when people see why I be normal, they might think it's him. They might think it's me. It could be someone else. But it's really, it gives you a feel that why be normal is global. It's the feel. Why be normal could be whatever you want it to be. And it's literally a breakdown of almost like struggle. For anybody who done struggle, anybody who done overcame adversity, you are why be normal.
So the event that we have coming up is a community outreach event that we've been doing for the past 4 years. This is something that's near and very, very dear. Like, I can't stress it enough. Something very, very dear to me and Dante called Cut the Hate and Share the Love. We partner with local barbers and stylists in the community, and they give them haircuts. They style their hair, and that's adults, that's kids. We do a hot meal. They get a hot meal. They get gently worn shoes and clothes. And then what we've added on top of that with extra components is that, you know, we'll bring a person in that has Medicare, Medicaid to help people get insurance, because some people may not have Medicare, Medicaid, or they may not have the ability to get insurance. So we'll do that. We're bringing in a mental health piece this year, as well as we're bringing in the American Job Center. We have a partnership with the American Job Center in the state. And so what we're doing is helping people, like I said, not just giving back to the community, but we're trying to empower people, because there's people right now that, hey, you may be having a tough time getting a job. You may not know where to look. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, why not meet people where they're at? And so this community outreach event, nobody will be turned away. I cannot stress that enough. Nobody will be turned away, no matter what it is. And then we're adding extra components as well, where we'll have Simpa coming in. Simpa will come in and they will be doing different STD testing, HIV testing, and things of that nature. And then giving information out, letting you know what's going on here in the community, to be able to, again, empower people, because that's what it's about.
When and where is this event, and where can people go online for more information about everything that YB Normal does?
So the event is March 8th, which is on a Sunday. It's right here at the Kingdom Center at 7030 East MLK from 2 to 5. Again, it's March 8th, 2 to 5 p.m., 7030 East MLK is the Kingdom Center. It's right behind the Urban League. If you know where Uncle Larry's Fish is, shout out to Uncle Larry's Fish. Amazing. But it is right behind the Urban League. And so it's that building right there with the fence around it. Come on in and get your haircut, get your hot meal, and get you some clothes, and let's change your life.
All right. Logan, Dante, thanks so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
No problem. Thank you.
Really, really grateful for the opportunity, Ray. Like, we really appreciate this, you know, more than you ever know, more than you realize, whatever the case may be. Because for us, at the end of the day, it's about empowering people.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More after our news with Bill McLean. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. On Friday night, Ensemble Theater of Chattanooga opens its 2020 season with Assassins, the Stephen Sondheim musical that delves into the dark side of the American experience.
What does a man do when before his eyes he sees a vision of a new hope dawning for his toiling, agonizing brothers? What does a man do when at last he realizes his suffering is caused not by the cruelty of fate, but by the injustice of his fellow human beings? What does a man do when he sees those dear to him starving, when he himself is starved? What does he do? What does he do? What does he do? What does he do? What does he do?
James Ogden is Ensemble's director for Assassins, which will be performed at Barking Legs Theater, and Terry Sanford is the musical director. James, Terry, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
So, Assassins, kicking off this season at Ensemble Theater. We're talking Sondheim, we're talking a musical about presidential assassins, would-be presidential assassins also. What's it like to take this on? Because from what Gary and Christy told me the other day, this is the first time that Ensemble Theater is doing Sondheim.
It's actually the first time I'm directing Sondheim as well, which is something I've been wanting to do for a really long time. I think his shows are really interesting. I've done a lot of shows recently where there's kind of a moment in the show where somebody sits down and says, okay, this is what the show is about. The last show Terry and I did together is Man of La Mancha, and The Impossible Dream is a song where he just sings what the point of the show is. And Assassins doesn't have a moment like that. It's so, and a lot of Sondheim shows, you have to go digging for it. And that's just so interesting to me.
And this musical has been around for almost 30 years. And this is being staged at a time that is tumultuous politically. This is an election year, but this goes beyond one political figure. This goes beyond one political party. This is about what Gary and Christy were talking about the other day, the theme for Ensemble Theater this season, the nature of responsibility. Tell me how that plays out in a production like this.
I think Assassins is less about the presidency and maybe kind of about the American dream. The song that starts and ends the show is Everybody's Got the Right to Be Happy. And so I think the show is kind of about the consequences of what happens if you really take that seriously, or is America living up to that responsibility to give everyone the right to be happy?
There's also the song that happens a little earlier in the show called Another National Anthem, where all of the assassins and would-be assassins are singing about the other national anthem that's sung by the people who can't afford to get into the ballparks. And as I sat and listened to them sing this every night, I kind of sat back and cringe and wonder, it's been really hard to write a Facebook post to advertise the show because you don't want to seem like you're promoting assassination of the president, but at the same time, you can't wonder who's out there leaning the same direction that these guys are. And where do you draw the line? Where do you say this is as far as I'm going to get politically active in my own dealings with this? And Sondheim does a great job of really making, using his lyrics to really make you think about, was this guy really crazy? What did his actions result in? And what brought him to that point? Where does that leave you yourself to be?
Yeah, because I think really interestingly, both historically and the way they're presented in the show, some of the assassins are just definitely crazy, and some of them are definitely not, right? They were fully conscious of what they were doing, and they understood the consequences. So I think the show isn't so much like justifying assassination, but explaining to those of us who think it's crazy why someone might arrive at that as a possible solution to their problems.
It's delving into the mindset behind these people that are all through American history without an endorsement. There's a depth there. There's a texture there. It's about human nature. It is not a one-note political statement applying to the politics of this particular time that is being staged here in Chattanooga or any particular time.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about Langston Hughes and his poetry and the theme of the deferred dream, when the American dream seems completely out of reach and there's no possible way for you to get to that. How do you respond to that? What does it mean to live in America where the thing that people come to America for is denied to you?
And how does the music bring that to the foreground alongside the performances?
Let me preface this by saying I'm no fan of Sondheim. I'm definitely in the Andrew Lloyd Webber camp.
Okay.
It's been sort of...
A hardship duty for you.
It has been a real question of conscience as to my doing this. But my usual response has been, it's just quirky enough that it interested me. I think one of the things that Sondheim is good at, I credit him as a master lyricist. In his compositions, his musical compositions, the thing that sets him apart from Webber is that he writes his music so conversationally. It's not a traditional melody structure. It's not the normal harmonies. I doubt seriously if you're going to walk out at the end of the show humming any of the tunes from the show. There are times I can't even recall them myself after having rehearsed it every night for several weeks. But what his writing does lend a poignancy and almost an sense of urgency to the lyric that he writes. It demands that you listen to it because it doesn't go where you expect it to go. He incorporates a wide variety of musical styles. He calls on everything from barbershop quartets to Viennese waltzes to you name it. It's stuck in there somewhere. There's a banjo. There's a little bit of country western ballad that comes through at various points in time. And so he sort of uses that, I think, to bring in the concept of the widespread cultural influences that have made America what it is. And then he reflects that through the storyline in dealing with, like, the assassin of Zangara, the Italian immigrant who ended up shooting
attempting to shoot FDR.
And mortally wounded the mayor of Chicago.
Right, Mayor Cermak. And so I think just the way that he addresses that particular scene and the music that he uses behind it just makes you really, really think about what it is he's saying. You don't get distracted by the music as you would in a lot of musicals. It also makes it a lot harder to do. It's a tough show. It's a very difficult show.
And it's also tough in terms of performances because you've got to pitch this just right.
Yeah. It is really interesting where the structure of the show decides to be very historically accurate and where it departs from that and how all of the assassins are portrayed throughout the show, that some of them are just so over the top and exaggerated in ways that the historical figures weren't. But it is just really a balancing act between, like, when do you make these people who shot presidents sympathetic and when do you make them extreme and almost inhuman? So working on those kinds of things in the performances, finding the nuances and what the show is trying to say in when it goes in one direction or the other.
And talk to me about the scenery in which these performances and the music come forth.
So the set that I've worked with Gary to design is, and this is kind of implied in the script and in the structure of the show, is that it's all set in like a carnival midway shooting gallery. Behind the assassins for the whole show, you have this carnival shooting gallery with the faces of the presidents that they shot at, attempted to assassinate. And the show just moves so quickly that there was never going to be a way to get to all of these different locations because it takes place over like 150 years all across the country and in all these different settings. So finding kind of the one location that would unify all of these stories. And the show is just very abstract in nature, that everything is kind of meant to be interpreted. And so that was the thought behind kind of setting it in.
And some of the themes that we're talking about here, they are as potent as ever, and not just talking about the psychology of presidential assassins, would-be presidential assassins, but I'm thinking with what we saw on the big screen last year with Joker.
I haven't seen, but I've heard a lot about it. And I think it is maybe kind of a similar thing, that it's not necessarily advocating for that kind of anarchic behavior, but it's trying to show people who think that that's insane why someone might arrive at that position.
Without justifying what they ultimately do or try to do.
Yeah.
What do you hope folks take away from the show?
Well, I certainly hope they're entertained. I don't know how they could help but be if they actually sat through it. James has done a masterful job of staging, as he always has. And so it's quite humorous, and Sondheim's lines are typical Sondheim. I mean, there are good jokes that are going to grab you. I hope that people will walk out of there and think about this concept of what does, in the current political climate, with the country as divided as it is, how far are we as a voting populace going to let this go before someone does crawl out of the woodwork to take it into their own hands? And I'm very concerned about the level of apathy that I see among people my age and among people younger as well, and the great discord and divide that we have. And so if we can in some small way contribute to that dialogue and get people to talking about it and thinking about it, it would make the effort worth the time that I spent dealing with Sondheim for the past several weeks.
Instead of Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Exactly.
I think for me, it's really that, I mean, similar to what Terry was saying, that concept of like in this current political climate, it's almost like everybody has their own vision of what America is, but we all have to live in the same America, and we have to figure out what that means, and we have to figure out what that looks like. And so this show really kind of poses that question of, well, how far does the American dream go? To what extremes are we willing to take this concept of everybody's got the right to be happy? If what makes someone happy is attempting to kill the president, do they have the right to do that? I think the show really just asks you to think about like what this thing America is that we all live in, and think about what we want that to look like, and how do we have conversations to make that happen.
And where can people go online for more information?
EnsembleTheaterOfChattanooga.com, and theater is, of course, T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
All right, James, Terry, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. Our show is produced by Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, and Will Davis from the studios of WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Follow us on Twitter at ScenicRoots423 and email us at ScenicRoots423@gmail.com. Also, follow WUTC on Facebook and Instagram, and listen online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. Join us again next time for Scenic Roots.